The one-night stand turns out to stand for a whole lot more. We talk with Anemone about Nui Numero Un on this episode of Mighty Movie Podcast. Welcome to MMP, I'm Dan Persons. In Nui Numero Un, a woman, played by Catherine DeLeon, and a man, played by Dimitri Staroge, meet at a rave, go back to his place for vigorous sex, and then spend the remainder of the evening and night talking. And despite having just seen these people in the act of coitus, it's in the conversation that we see them the most naked, both their candor and their delusions about themselves, their need for and fear of connection, and the paths they've taken that have brought them to this one uncommonly revelatory night. Director Anemone, in her debut effort, captures the drama with compelling restraint, forsaking the standard widescreen format for a more intimate, classic 35mm framing. It's a spare, simple, and beautifully realized film that blew me away. So, here's my interview with Anemone. Enjoy. First off, really trivial question. I wanted to ask you about the pronunciation of the title, because I keep wanting to go Nui number one, and I'm going, that can't be right. So,
in English, it would be night number one, and in French, it's nuit numéro un.
Okay. Consistency helps. So, yeah, that helps. The other thing, and it is also sort of a trivial question, but it caught my attention right away, your aspect ratio. Usually, even low-budget films these days, because they're shot on digital, they're going at the very least 16:9. This is in 4:3, which is the standard 35mm aspect ratio, because even low-budget filmmakers go 16:9. I figure it can't. It has to be a deliberate decision on your part. Why did you do that?
Well, it's a choice. It's a really old format, like the Bergman and old black and white film format. We shot the movie in 35mm, in fact, and it's 4:3 format because for me, there's nothing else to show in the movie than the character. There is only one man and one woman, and there is no, they feel a little bit, they have no air, no room in their head also. This is how they feel, and for me, there's this claustrophobic feeling with the square image. You have no choice when you have this close shot of her at the end, maybe in the back. You have no choice to see the eyes, to see the tears and everything, so you feel probably closed, like in prison, a little bit like her, like you're a prisoner of the movie. So this is why I chose this format. But it's a really complicated format, like young filmmaker, don't do it. Because it's hard after in the theater, like a lot of theater will play it in the in the regular format. So, but it's I like it. I think it's beautiful. I think it's old, and I love this format also.
You really ran the risk of having them like cut off at the forehead.
Sure,
and like that.
Sure. Well, in fact, it happened. We traveled a lot in the film festivals, and it happened. And finally, for me, it's terrible. Oh my God, people will just don't understand and hate it and everything. And finally, they just don't notice that much. Like, filmmakers will see this kind of things, but people who are going to the movie, as long as they see the eyes and they can understand what they say. Like, for me, it's terrible, but not for the people, usually.
It's interesting you've selected this format because of the type of story you're telling, and it's a very unusual story for film. When did you decide that you wanted to focus in pretty much on two characters having a conversation, despite the explicitness of the sex in the film? It's more about the discussion. And what were the challenges having made that decision? Were you prepped for that?
I wrote the film. I was 27 years old. It's like 3 years ago. I wrote it, and I remember I was I had a party all night. I was in a rave party and everything, and I was on the street in the morning. The sun was out, and me and my friend, we were between 25 and 35 years old, and I was thinking, what are we doing there? We have no job, no love story, like longer than a month, nothing really serious in life. Why are we still teenager at this point of our life? Why are we not doing babies or doing great jobs and important things? So I wanted to write a movie about that. And for me, the discussion was really important, because maybe it's not clear for anyone, but at the end of the movie, this is what they have. They have nothing. They are kind of lost in life, but they have the power of the words. They at last can discuss. And for me, this is what they will save them. So I wanted two people talking about pretty serious thing in a way. They are not philosophers, so sometimes it sounds like they are not big, important philosopher people, so it sounds a little bit strange, and they talk about big subject and everything, but I'm thinking at least they tried. Like some movie now are so superficial, so I wanted them to have those big important discussion about life and death.
You do suggest that prior to this particular night, these characters have been in the similar cycle, not with each other, but with other people. That this is something that happens to them maybe night after night, but frequently enough. What do you feel it is in this particular night that changes for them, that takes them to this place?
For me, this night will change them forever. They will not fall in love. It's not the beginning of a romance or anything, but there's this thing in the movie. She's from Quebec. She speaks French in Canada. Like, this is the French part of Canada. And there is this big identity fighting since years between French and English speaker in Canada. And he's from Ukraine, but he don't really speak the language. He's kind of lost, like her. So it's, for me, two lost people. And she could go away, she would go after the sex, but he decided that they would talk this night. And for me, they have nothing in common except that they are completely lost and depressed in a way, and looking for more. And it's not a love story, they will not save each other, but for me, Clara, the girl, she didn't say... when I see the movie again now, I have the feeling of two people who didn't say anything for 20 years, like, and it all goes out in this one night. It never happened in real life, but this is why the movie are, I think. And yes, she will feel better after that, because she told a lot of secrets and a lot of things that she never tell to anyone, and he will feel better because he's a real loser in life, and for one time he could take care of someone else than himself. So I think he'll be better a little bit after that.
As you mentioned, and it becomes fairly obvious that this is not going to be a love story, at least not a conventional love story. And what I find interesting in the realization of that is the tension between the characters. It's sort of a game of keep away between them. They are reaching out but also distancing each other almost simultaneously. How complex was it to get both sides of that in their personalities?
It's a really, really written movie. Like, every word they say and every move they do are written on the script. Like, the sex scene at the beginning was 15 pages of the screenplay, like really described. And when they go outside and fight under the rain, we ask a choreographer to help us with the dance, with the move. So it's all really not so natural, really written. So we worked a lot on all that. We thought about every little word, and when the actors would change a word, I would go crazy. I was, no, I choose this word, so don't change it. And we in fact, it's funny because sometimes the Nikolai, the guy, is, you hate him at one. He's like hard to love, like, and on the shooting we wanted that, but at the end of the shot I would say cut, and everyone in the room were just, oh, shut up, like, we hate you. And I wanted that. And there is this power game between them, like, he's, when he goes too far and he scream at her and she just go away, he wants her back, and he's like not really lovable, but I kind of love those kind of complex people.
How did Dimitri shoulder the crew's abuse? Because it's got to be hard enough to begin with. I mean, to be able to handle that.
The fact that the character is
the character is that way, and also the crew is reacting.
Yeah. He kind of a little bit can. Look, they look like each other a little bit. Nikolai and Dimitri Storage, the actor, they are this kind of dark personality in a way. So I think he really understood completely the character. You know, the tattoo the Nikolai got, it's all the real tattoo on his body of the actor. So he kind of get exactly what the character was. And he told me when he read the script, he told me, like, I understand, I've been there. Like, I've been this kind of guy. In fact, I've been there too, and a lot of my friends and people could relate to the character. Maybe not completely. Like, there is terrible, terrible story in the movie, and you don't have to go through all that story to understand, I think, the movie. But he could take it. I think it was really good.
What was the shooting like? How long did it take to shoot this for a while?
It was 20 days, well, 20 nights of shoot. Mm-hmm. It's pretty long in a way, because it's only one place and two actors. But for the actors, it was so hard. After 5 hours of work, they could not do it anymore. Like, it was so, it's like doing a play in a way, because they are talking on and on. So after 5 hours, we had to stop. So we had 20 nights in this little creepy apartment. And when the sun would go up and we would go out, we were like greeting and going out of this little apartment. But I think we could have do the movie with no budget, and like in 3 nights of shooting with actors, but I for me it would not be the same, because we need people to be really committed. The actors, they are really brave and they are really into the part. It's not easy to play, so we could take the time. Also, 20 nights it's good. We could take the time to rehearse, to work a lot on the text. It was good.
How large a crew did you have on this?
How
large a crew?
It was like almost 20 people. It seems a lot, but for this kind of production, but it's when you shoot 35mm, it like the crew is already, there's a lot of people around the camera and everything, and we have the minimum crew we need for this kind of shooting.
Getting back to the 4:3, was your DP accustomed to shooting this way?
Nobody does that anymore. So the DP was really happy, because he's a photographer also, so he really loved the images, and he loved the light, and he was happy to try something in this square format. But the technical lab, they were doing, what are you doing? And it's so complicated, because it's full frame and you have to take care of all the, it's really technical, but all the negatives is exposed, so it's particular. But I'm not the only one. I saw Fish Tank by Andrea Arnold. It's in 4:3, so I'm not, it's not so original.
But these days, it's like going back to black and white. You know, it's like it sort of blows everything out of the water.
Yeah.
Just technically, you
yes.
know.
Yes, of course. But for me, it was also like I probably it will be my first and last movie shot in 35 millimeters. It's we don't almost do it anymore. It will be HD. Probably my next movie, I'll have to do it because of the money and of the lab and distribution and everything. So for me, it was like maybe my first and last fun. So I'll do the real square format. And it's like, I don't know how you say that, tribute to the past.
Homage.
Homage. Exactly.
Wanted to ask quickly about the exterior shots here, because there are several where they go back out on the street. One time I think it's clear weather, one time it's raining, and another time it's snowing. It's like hell of a weather for one night.
Yes, exactly. We wanted the rain. In fact, it's false rain. It's really false rain, and we shot it in the same night, the false rain and then the snow. And the snow is real, and it's really not normal. It was in October in Montreal, and it was raining and snowing, and everyone was just, oh, do you want to do it another night when it's not snowing? But for me, it was beautiful. I think, like, it's perfect. It's a crazy night for them, so it's a crazy night in the nature and the weather too. So for me, it was not a problem. I think it's beautiful when they are dancing in the snow. I like it.
Aside of the obvious challenges of shooting a sex scene, what were the challenges for Catherine in this role?
In fact, it was pretty hard. The end of the movie with this, it's 20 minutes scenes in the bath, and it's almost in one shot. So it was really the concentration, I think. And they would play together, but not that much, because it's, in a way, it's dialogues, but it's more monologues. They are talking for themselves. So she learned, and it's really hard because it's really emotional. Like, she has to do a lot of pretty dark dark feelings and everything, and also in really particular words. So it's maybe it's not clear for, because you speak English, but it's not completely natural French. It's kind of poetry a little bit, how they talk. It's really chosen words. So she has this challenge to keep the words like by heart, to know them by heart, and also to be free enough to go in the emotion and everything. And finally, we shot when it's 35 millimeters and it's 10 minutes rolls, and we would put the camera on and go just until we run out. We would go for 10 minutes and she had the camera there and she would speak. And I think she's magical. For me, on the set, when we shot the last sequence in the bath, we were so moved on the set already. So I was thinking, okay, some things work in this movie. Finally, we'll have it, I think. But finally, it's the first. It's always the first take that we choose. In the editing, they both were always better on the first take.
That's a relief, because for both of them, given the fact that they both do have these long monologues, you know, any flub is cut, reload. So the pressure is on them there too.
Of course. No, really, for them, it was almost like a long, 20-night place. Like, when I was, like, we could do the shot and choose everything, but when I was saying action, it was on them. Like, we worked a lot together. We learned it by heart together in the park in Montreal. We were working on the text and everything, but and talk a lot about the intention and the characters and everything. But when I would say action, I could do nothing, and in fact they were really better than me. If they would forget to say something, I would not really notice. I was just, oh, did you miss? They would notice that they missed something, or and me, I was just, no, I didn't notice. So it was a lot on their shoulder, and it was the big challenge, in fact, to choose the good casting. When the casting was done, for me, the important decision were made.
Given that this is so dialogue centric, how did you keep your eye, forgive the pun, how did you keep your eye on the visuals and make sure that this is film instead of theater?
Yeah. Well, I was not afraid of that. In fact, for me, like, I really love Romer. Okay. I don't know how to pronounce it in English, but I was not afraid of theatrical feeling. I didn't care about that, and for me, I wanted the film to work on opposite scenes. Like, we start in the rave party, which is a really visual scene and people dancing in slow motion, a lot of color, and there's a mood. And then I was not afraid of people talking on the brown room. For me, I don't know, as long I love to hear people talking. I believe in the power of the actors too. I think they are two beautiful person, and I love to watch them. And maybe it's not the same for everyone. I know some people hate this kind of movie. Me, I like it, and I know some people like it too a lot, and they can relate to the characters and everything. So I really trust the power of people, of the eyes, of the skin, and of every emotion. So I was not afraid.
You achieved your goal, by the way, in my opinion. It's not theater, it's not radio, so
Thank you. We're
good there. I wanted to ask you, finally, how much do you think our sexual identity is separate from the rest of us? Because it strikes me that one of the themes of this is both, you know, the general idea is that in our sexual selves, we're our most honest and our most raw, but it can also be a mask, it can also be a shield, and I think we're seeing it being demonstrated in these people.
Yeah, I hope I understand the question well. My English is not so good, but for me, when they have sex at the beginning, it's the only way they know to communicate, in a way. They don't really want... Well, they want sex, of course. They are having sex, but they more want to be with someone. They just don't want to go back home alone, because it's pretty sad to come back home alone after a party like that and everything. So they communicate how they can, and usually after this kind of one night stand, you just go back home and you never see the person again, or maybe yes, but rarely, and you feel so empty finally, because you share something, but it's nothing. It's not intimacy. It's so physical. And for me, that's why it's so long, the sex scene at the beginning. It's not really good sex. It's like all normal things that people know you have to do in sex, every position and everything. So this is what they know. And in a way, they are just trying so hard to communicate. And in fact, I wrote this movie because I was talking with friends of mine and with my own experiences. After this kind of ride, when it happens to you, you feel so empty and bad. Like, the days after, just wow, we share so much in a way. Like, it's not nothing. Like, it's a strange society we live in. Like, people's things think that sex is nothing. It's like, it's just physical. But no, it's not just physical. Even if you don't know the person you're with, you share really important things. So I wanted to think about that in the movie.
By the way, just as an aside, and it's just sort of a tangential thing, if you want to get really depressed, You need to check out the keywords for this film on IMDb.
Really?
Yeah. Amongst the ones that spring to memory are prosthetic penis, woman sitting on toilet, and shaved vagina.
Yeah.
I went in and put in, I think, isolation and personal revelations and literary references.
Oh my god, thank you very much for doing it. But in a way, it's not surprising at all. It makes me sad a little bit, but it's not surprising. And I'm just thinking, okay, well, people don't really go to the movie anymore and don't watch movie. Like, I'm not saying that it's a smart movie, but I was trying to do a smart movie. But I'm just thinking, okay, if you need the sex and the those kind of thing to watch the movie, let's go. Watch it, I don't care.
Whatever works.
Yeah, of course, exactly. But please watch it completely.
It's well worth watching and listening to. So. And thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
Nuit Numéro Un opened on July 27th in New York. It's getting to D.C. on August 3rd and will be getting to other cities throughout August. You can see the trailer and get the link to the official website over at mightymoviepodcast.com. And if you want to write me, please send your email to dan@mightymoviepodcast.com. May have another interview very soon, special interview. Stay tuned. We're continuing with our sporadic, as-available schedule, but we are keeping on, and remember that the Cinefantastique Spotlight Movie Review podcasts are continuing as well. In the meantime, thanks for listening. Have a great weekend. This has been a production of Upstart Company NYC, copyright 2012, Dan Persons, all rights reserved, no unauthorized duplication permitted.